Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Melanie Goodwin believes that she was abused as a child. However, she's virtually no memory of her life up to the age of 16. She believes that to cope with the abuse, she created multiple other personalities. But when she was 40, they came back. And every day, Melanie lives with dissociative identity disorder. She's co-founder and director of an organisation for people with DID. It's called First Person Plural. Melanie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How much of your life do you remember up to the age of 16?
I remember very, very little of my life before 16. I have memories that can be prompted by photographs, so I know I'm there, so I know about that. But they tend to be memories that are very factual about this happened or that, I was there at that event or whatever, rather than whole memories, which you get the feel of how you felt there and all those sort of things. It sort of narrows down the depth of a memory.
Mm. And what happened around the age of 16, Melanie?
At 16, my abuse stopped. It was abuse prior to 16 that to survive. I evolved dissociative identities. It's not a disorder while you're actually needing it to survive things that are happening to you that are so hard. It only becomes a disorder in adult life or later on, when you don't need these coping mechanisms, but they're still hardwired into your brain and still coming into play all the time, which can make your life very, very complex. You're living as though you're living a life under threat all the time, which you're not.
And so from the age of 16 onwards, Melanie, were you aware of the other personalities?
Absolutely not. I, as what we call the outside part who did the daily living, had absolutely no memories of anything before 16. That's how it happens. That's the whole point of it. It's to fragment it off, to get it into a safe place so it doesn't impact on your daily living. This happens for a lot of people. They don't have that because I'm just a part of the whole. I'm not any more bigger or more important than all the other parts.
Yeah. But then around the age of 40, those walls, I suppose, they started to crumble a bit.
Yeah, they did. I had a major traumatic event in my adult life then, and that started the dissociative barriers, if you like, in the brain to come down. Because after all, I have only got one brain. I am only one person. It's not how I saw myself when the dissociative barriers came down. But, you know, I realized that. And then once they start becoming more permeable, then the memories start seeping through into the whole of the brain, if you like. You're using the whole of your consciousness as opposed to it being so fragmented.
How many different people are there?
I don't talk about that because, actually, do you know, I don't know. There are lots of us. We had quite a lot of different adult parts who managed daily living, but there are a lot of small parts, but we don't get into numbers because it distracts from the reality of the consequences and how we have to manage daily living.
Mm. But say, for instance, are there different people who do different things?
Very much so. There are different parts who are different ages, and as a child, they had different roles. You know, one part might have been the part that went to school. Another part went to brownies. Another part, lots of the different parts, managed the different abuse situations because for people to have this condition, it usually the abuse starts very early on, pre-five, often pre-verbal. So once your brain's found a way of coping with life, it does it for good situations as well as difficult situations. So it becomes habitual. So rather than face a situation, another part would come to manage it, if you understand that.
Yes. When those walls became more permeable, as you say, then did you find other personalities, if you like, crashing in on your daily life?
Exactly. And what happened was, it was absolutely chaotic because we're going back 25 years now. And in those days, you know, we're pre-internet. Even now, there's very little knowledge out there about it, especially within the NHS, unfortunately. And so there was nowhere to go with it. This was happening to me. I was having some therapeutic help, But, you know, the therapist didn't know what was happening either. So it was just happening to me, and my life was getting more and more crazy, if you like, and more out of control, because different parts were coming out and taking over. So my behavior would be a terrified 14-year-old, a terrified 3-year-old, somebody who wanted to go and play on the swings. And this was chaotic living, absolutely chaotic. But then once we understood what was happening, and I understood it was different parts doing this, and then we began to understand the basis of this. And I was very fortunate. I've had excellent therapy for a lot of years. You know, the trauma is then downloaded, is how I describe it. It's processed because it's stored as though it's just happened to you. So it's always holds that power to come out and affect your daily living.
Mm.
So it's like anything for anybody. You know, it doesn't have to be all the furthest end of trauma. It's every day we're experiencing things that, you know, we put to one side, don't we? And we pick up later on because it's not appropriate in the moment. And we just do it a bit more profoundly, if you like.
Yes. When this started happening, were you the Melanie that you thought yourself to be, if you like? Were you aware that these other personalities had kind of hijacked things for a little bit?
I was aware. I was experiencing a life that I seemed to have no control over. None whatsoever. It was happening to me.
Yeah.
But I was aware of it happening to me. And so once I began to understand how the brain can do exact, you know, it's an incredible organ that it can hold things so in such a sort of safe way so that it keeps you okay. Then I began to understand what was happening. Then I could begin to work out how we were going to all manage this. You know, when I talk about the whole, I mean all the different parts. You know, for many years, the different parts had to have quite a bit of the day to do the things they like doing. We no longer have to do that now because, like any child who's had a trauma, if they're able to deal with their trauma at the time or later on, it becomes a part of them, an integrated part. It becomes part of just who you are. It has an ongoing effect, but it is just who you are. So it doesn't hold the power to, every time there's a trigger out there, it might be a mannerism, it might be somebody who looks like somebody who used to hurt you, it could be a smell, anything. You know, you're walking around like an exploded sort of bomb, in a sense, waiting to go off, if you like, because it's so powerful, this. But once you've addressed the situation, you've faced what's happened to you, it becomes just a part of your story.
And so now, in terms of managing it, and as you say there, you're a we, is it, if you like, a kind of a matter of negotiation between the various parts?
It very much used to be, absolutely. I mean, the 16-year-old used to dress the body for work, and we cycled to work for 4 years because that was her, what she wanted to do. But then she gave me the outside part of the day to work. And then we'd come home at night, feed our external biological children, how is that the difference to the inside children. And then I would go upstairs. I had a room that it was my own room, and little ones would come out and colour, read, listen to stories that were appropriate for a 3-year-old. And it's not as if, it's absolute. You're experiencing this as a 3-year-old. It's really hard to convey how absolute it is, because I think so often people say, yes, but, or yeah, you know, you could, but now let's talk to the big one. It doesn't work like that. It's a complete, the brain has kind of switched over to being a 3, so you only have access to thinking like a 3-year-old. But as time goes by and the memories don't hold the same power, that child, you know, you were a 3-year-old once and thought like a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
So that 3-year-old aspect of you is part of who you are, isn't it? But it's integrated. So that's how it is for me now. So we don't have to negotiate anymore. We're all there. We all do enjoy sort of similar things. And so it's much more integrated living, if you like, because I'm aware of everybody, but we all lead one life, which makes life a lot easier, I can tell you. Especially like if you're packing to go away. Before, I would take sort of bagfuls of toys and different clothes, just not knowing. Now I can pack a small holder, you know, for overnight stay, and I'll know it'll be okay because we only have the one need for all those aspects of living.
How has this been for your family?
Incredibly tough. incredibly tough. In the early days, it was awful because I was very, very ill. I don't consider I've got an illness. I do not consider DID as an illness, but it has the capacity to make you very ill at different times of your life. I was mentally very unwell without understanding what was happening to me, not getting any real help from the NHS, nowhere safe to go when often suicide is and self-harm can be an enormous problem for people with DID, and I had a period when it was for me. So I was trying to keep going, running, you know, running the family, going to work and battling with this daily. And, you know, sometimes I failed miserably and it has had a big impact on my family. But we're all in contact. We're all together. You know, I've now got several wonderful grandchildren who I see on a regular basis. So it can have a positive outcome, but you do need the therapeutic input. And that's the work we do with the organization, First Person Plural. You know, we're celebrating our 20th birthday this year, and which is amazing. We think it's amazing anyway. And, you know, we've worked to raise an awareness of this subject and trying to get it into mainstream mental health so people are screened for this, because we know it's much more prevalent than the figures perhaps suggest.
I'm getting the impression from what you're saying is that perhaps not enough research has been done into DID.
No, there's not the research, and it's a sort of one of these catch-22 situations, because if it's not even being thought about as it's a possibility that somebody coming to see a psychiatrist might have this condition, they're not screening for it. We get mislabeled so much along the way with other mental health conditions. So they haven't got any figures. So they want the evidence that this is a condition that needs to be screened for. But if they're not even looking for it, where do you get these figures from? So it's a real catch-22. But there are some very good pockets of work beginning to happen. And I live over in Norfolk, and we actually are one of the trusts that are doing some really pioneering work in Norfolk, really good stuff, hoping to put a proper strategy in place so that somebody coming into the mental health services will be screened for it appropriately and will find a pathway through to getting the proper help. We're a long way off it being really, really good because of the financial constraints, but there are things really positively happening. It's slow, it's one step at a time, but there are changes, and there are lots of good people out there wanting these changes, and it's how we can get them embedded.
Melanie Goodwin is co-founder and director of First Person Plural. Melanie, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.